Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you don't have a clear curriculum for your classroom, it is so overwhelming to try to put that together yourself. Spending hours on Pinterest and Google, pulling worksheets and pulling pieces of curriculum together to make something that works for your classroom. That's why we created the Autism Helper Curriculum and now offer Curriculum Access. Curriculum Access gets you access to all levels and all subjects of the highly differentiated, evidence-based Autism Helper Curriculum. You can have students working on letter identification and working on parts of speech at the same time in our easy-to-use curriculum. We currently have hundreds of teachers using Curriculum Access from all over the world with consistently rave reviews. I want you to join that group of teachers. Now is the time to ask your administrators for Curriculum Access. We have an email template ready to go so you can ask them to set up a demo. Your administrators can jump on a live call with our team members to see everything that's included in the Autism Helper Curriculum Access. Next year, let's reduce the overwhelm. Let's start the year out with a path and a plan and resources to meet all the diverse needs of your students. Let's make next year the year of Curriculum Access. Head over to the show notes to learn more.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper Podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism.
I want you to raise your hand if you have struggled with the best practices for inclusion with your classroom. You guys can't see me, but I'm raising my hand. You may be raising your hand too. This was something that I really struggled with in the classroom. Determining what was the best way to include my students within the rest of their community. And then advocating for it. Oh my gosh, half of our job as a teacher is to advocate for our classrooms. Even when I knew the right solution, it was making sure everyone else was on board. Well, today I'm getting to share my conversation with who I really think is an inclusion expert, Dr. Paula Kluth. Paula is a consultant, author, and advocate. Now, there were so many things that Paula could have chatted with us about. I mean, she has such a wide range of knowledge in so many areas, but I really took this opportunity to pick Paula's brain all about inclusion. And oh my gosh, we covered a lot of ground. We talk about inclusion in the virtual setting, in the socially distant classroom, and then just general inclusion tips and best practices. I love Paula's approach at being proactive, at being creative, and looking for opportunities. She makes it seem so doable and so easy, and I just really, truly love her advice. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump right in. Hi, Paula. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Sasha, for having me. I sure do appreciate it.
Well, I've really been looking forward to this conversation. I've read so many of your books, and I know there are so many topics you could talk about, but I'm especially excited today to really focus on inclusion because I know that is something you are so passionate about.
Absolutely. It's the topic of not only my first book, but many of my books actually, was actually a hyper-focus kind of a topic for me during the pandemic. And I know we're going to get into that, but just, you know, at a time when we have to kind of redefine what inclusion is and was. So, I was more interested this year, maybe than ever before, because there was a lot we could not take for granted.
Yeah, that's so true. And something that was so pushed to the bottom of the totem pole with everything that was going on.
Absolutely. And it, you know, was a fear. That was one of my first reactions was, will inclusion be considered? Will it be, will anybody do professional development? Will anybody care about this when there's so many other concerns? But the good news is, I think that that was an assumption, but the good news is I was able to find quite a lot of folks who not only centered inclusion at this time, but found that it was harder than ever to do, you know, in some ways, but also more important than ever before. So I think there was this silver lining. There was also an embrace and an understanding that we need each other more than ever. And that goes for kids too.
Yeah. You know, I'd love to know what kind of initially sparked, you know, that fire within you to really advocate and teach about inclusion.
Well, it's so funny because it was for years I didn't really think about or talk about it too much. And I was doing a podcast probably 5 years ago, and somebody asked me that. And I started talking about this story, which actually now I find, why didn't I write about this or think about this before? But actually, I'm 50 years old. When I was a senior in high school, my high school brought some kids with disabilities with pretty complex support needs back to my high school. And I now know that those students were in a facility for students with disabilities, were in a school for kids with disabilities, but only for kids with disabilities. And they brought some of those students back to their home school, their high school. And I became super interested in this and noticed, of course, these students in the lunchroom. And I approached the teacher and said, do you need anything? Is this a mm-hmm. thing that kids can sort of be involved in? She's just one of my heroes to this day. Her name's Mary Durgener. And because of her, this whole career has been possible, but she was just a visionary. And she got so many kids at my high school involved. She got, you know, so many students talking to each other, interacting with each other. She was just really the master of figuring out that this doesn't need to be formal. This doesn't need to be a thing that I can just help kids to start conversations, that kids can figure some things out on their own. I mean, she would do things like, she would just say, you know, Scott needs a ride to the basketball game and you should go get him. And I mean, I remember showing up at somebody's house and the family didn't even know I was coming. You know, here they had never had a student. Their child had never had, a friend, a student without a disability. And the parents that like at first were kind of like alarmed and then it's like, okay, off you go. She's just such a hero to me. And I always talk about her because I think sometimes we do need a lot of planning and sometimes we do need to figure out things and we do need to put scaffolds in place for friendship and connection. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes kids need permission. They need a bit of a push. They need an idea. And she was so, so smart about starting lots of conversations and just finding real, finding a lot of richness in small moments and in finding spaces for individual kids to connect.
I love that. Because sometimes it is just about those small moments and those opportunities for that.
Absolutely. She's just a hero to this day and she knows it. I mean, she's been in my life. She's been in my life. And that's the other thing I think that's important when we talk about inclusion is that special ed teacher, you know, all teachers are there for all kids. Every caring adult in the building should be there for every student in the building. And, you know, every educator is an educator for all. And thank goodness, I mean, Mary Durgener is one of the most influential educators of my life. Thank goodness that she understand what I now call radical role sharing. She understood that she wasn't just a teacher for 10 kids. She was a teacher for all kids. And we want that from not just general ed teachers to embrace that. We want special ed teachers to embrace that too.
Yeah. And if everyone embraces that, I mean, think of the ripple effect. I mean, look at her impact on your life and how much change you've caused with so many educators and students because of that. So it's cool to think about the potential if we all embrace that.
I would absolutely put an exclamation point on that, Sasha. And I would also say that this is my work is in no small part, that I also just want to send out a Valentine of sorts to those friends that I met, to Allison and to Scott and to Jerry. And it's, you know, the first friends I ever had with disabilities. And you know, just really folks who were there for me. You know, I had some difficult things happen, as many people do, you know, in their young life, and it's a very, you know, it's your time when, you know, you're becoming more independent, and you're learning how to, you know, you're gaining your own coping skills. And these were really wonderful friends for me. And I think it's no small part to who those individuals were. So when we don't facilitate or celebrate inclusivity, there are so many losses. And, you know, to think of my life without those connections, well, let me just say, I don't want to think about my life without those connections. So it's, you know, it's a loss for students, it's a loss for adults, and it's a loss for the community.
Yeah, that's so true. And I love, like you said, that you've championed kind of continuing this inclusive process even during a pandemic. So, you know, I'd love to hear about your new book and kind of the whole idea, you know, people wrapping their brains around what inclusion can look like in virtual instruction.
Well, yeah, I had to wrap my brain around it as well. you know, that my first question was, is this a thing? Can we do this? And so I, again, credit where credit is due, I started reaching out to a bunch of folks that I knew that were creative and folks who were, I knew would not let this go. Parents, teachers. And then I was following people on social media who were like a dog with a bone. And I started just contacting people. And so just said, how is inclusion going to look? What are we going to do for peers? How can students get their work adapted? How can families do this? And so it was really an effort of just, you know, reaching out to a lot of other and just really collaborating and just saying, you know, let's think about this together as a community and decide not only what are the, you know, what are the parameters, but what are the strategies that people are employing? And so let's share them as quickly as we can. And this needs to be a dynamic process and it needs to start right now. And so a lot of it was in the summer, I was going on my Facebook page. I was doing Facebook Live. I was inviting people in conversations. I was tagging people on Twitter. I mean, you name it. And so in the book, there's almost 20 different voices and contributors. And some of them I didn't even know. My first interaction with them was writing something with them. So these are not all people I knew about before. I started finding people and saying, I like what you're talking about. Will you work with me?
I love that. I mean, this community, you know, like we said, there are silver linings in this, that this community really truly came together to be like, okay, as educators, as parents, what are we going to do in this, you know, really not great situation to make it the best we can? That's so cool that, you know, people were wanting to contribute and help to share ideas.
They were absolutely generous and including, even though none of the chapters are authored by students themselves, but students were incredibly creative as well. And so a lot of these ideas are inspired by children and young people as well. So yeah, it's definitely was has taken a village, right?
Yeah. So what are some of, like, I know you have a ton of ideas in that book, but if you don't mind sharing one or two of like the quick wins that you're able to get through creating simple solutions for having inclusion within digital learning?
Sure. Well, one of the things that we started talking about right away was how to get kids together. So I'll just share some of my favorite stories about that. I met a wonderful teacher named Sarah Brady, who is a teacher in the Los Angeles area. And she was doing virtual lunch tables right off the bat. And these were truly inclusive. And what I mean by that was she wasn't taking a group of students with disabilities and maybe trying to find a student without a disability to attend. She was really, you know, she was an inclusion facilitator. She was a co-teacher. So she was looking for her students, the friends of her students, the classmates who had good relationships. And so she was, you know, creating these lunch tables around individual students. So the one student that's featured in the book, his name's Finn, and she essentially contacted other kids who had good experiences with him, you know, good relationship, and said, hey, do you want to do this? So it's maybe, I think, four students without disabilities and Finn. And what was really creative about it was she really worked hard on making this kind of, a twofer, a threefer, one. I don't know. She not only supported kids at a time when they were vulnerable. You know, all kids were vulnerable. I think, again, about being here as a special ed teacher who's really showing up for kids with and without disabilities. So they get to meet with an individual teacher at a time when all kids probably needed that kind of contact. Yeah. She's just, you know, shooting these questions out to them. Hey, what's new on TikTok? You know, really informal, but having their eating their lunch, they're just hanging out. But she's also working really hard to provide fluency support for Finn with his new augmentative communication system. So while she's, yes, has this goal of absolutely having these kids stay connected, the entire time that she's meeting with students, she's, you know, modeling on her own communication board, you know, where you can find these topics. She's honoring Finn's voice when he initiates his communication. So it's just a really elegant example of how we can not only help all kids really stay in the loop socially, but how we are unwilling to give up some of those really important goals and objectives.
I love
like,
that.
You know, like learning those menus or learning how to just, you know, interact with friends using my device. So that was one story that hit me immediately. Another is actually also from, we have kind of stories coast to coast, but just kind of staying in the peer theme. Another really great example was how folks were creating peer tutoring relationships. So I worked with Mary Falvey on that chapter, Dr. Mary Falvey, who is an old friend and colleague and also from the LA area. And Mary has been working with a student named Logan, who we write about. And Logan's one of the peers that he, I shouldn't say I'm using peer in air quotes here, but he has a great relationship with his sister, Emma. So Emma was being used as a peer tutor for him in more formal ways. And one of the things that Mary and I have subsequently talked about is how a lot of siblings were kind of called into these relationships, you know, to kind of support schooling in a new way. And so now when I present in the book, I talk about how we can empower families and siblings to, and these are things we can continue doing after the pandemic is over, but by just sending home, you know, whether it's really giving really discrete assignments, like, could you read, you know, a 7-year-old or 9-year-old doesn't know how to conduct a lesson necessarily. But if we said things like, hey, would you mind reading 15 minutes a night with your brother? Or we also talk about sending home games that are, you know, standards themed, like, yeah, sending home a game or doing a puzzle that's related to the solar system. And that's, you know, that could be a repeating homework assignment, or here's a memory game, you know, that little memory game where you flip over, you know, two at a time to make matches. Could we send home a memory game that's themed on something that we're learning in class, or flashcards? And so we started talking about other ways that we could more easily bring in peers, like maybe doing those same things with peer tutors, you know, giving them some, you know, exercises or games that they can use. Because some kids, especially younger children, they're not really sure how to tutor. And usually when they are helping peers, there's adults around. But now if we're in a breakout room or if we're doing this tutoring on the, you know, in addition to what's happening at school, those scaffolds may not be in place. So we're saying, you know, do some more informal things like, you know, have students engage in some of these repeated activities, or use something that we call a peer tutor script, where you highlight a few little steps. It's just a mini lesson plan is what it is, but where you highlight a few ideas or a few bullet points, and then students can easily, they know that anxiety melts away. It's like, oh, I know how to do flashcards with my, you know, my friend, I just have to follow these quick and easy steps. So we found that some of these peer tutor scripts, where they're just a few bullet points, have really helped kids. And we've been really excited with this peer tutor content, because we're now reminding everybody in the virtual land, that landscape, that you no longer have to have peer tutors from the classroom. They can be from, you know, upper grades. They can be from the middle school. They can be from the high school. They can be that neighbor that good friend that moved away to California last year, or Texas. And these are some of the things that we're hoping will last after the pandemic, is really understanding that some of these exciting practices we can adopt long after this is over, like not feeling confined for peer tutoring and support to our schools or classrooms.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, it provides so much more flexibility that we've maybe been wanting, but not really realizing was such an obstacle.
Absolutely. And can I just share one more?
Please, I love these. Yeah.
So another one of my favorite stories is from, I have to get out of California because I have to honor my Midwestern folks here. But another one of my favorite stories comes from here in the Midwest. And it's a story from a mom. Her name's Lisa Orvis and her daughter's name is Chloe. And Chloe has Down syndrome. And Chloe is a senior and she was taking guitar class when the pandemic hit. And the mom, Lisa, said, you know, they translated these lessons and they told Chloe, okay, take videos of yourself playing these things and then send them in. And, you know, it just wasn't enough for her. It wasn't exciting. It wasn't connected to peers. It was no longer very motivating. So Lisa just wrote to the teacher and said, could this be made into a club of, in some way? And so the teachers essentially responded and said, yeah, let's ask other kids. And they started this guitar club in essence. And they ended up just jamming. They bring it, you know, other another music teacher joined, her music teacher joined, other kids joined, and they would kind of jam every week. And that has now been really helpful. I'm sorry, she was a junior last year. So now she's a senior. She's playing guitar again. It was a good way to kind of get to know some of these peers that she maybe didn't know as well and now knows a little bit better. And she's was able to, you know, again, polish those skills in ways that were socially connected. So that part of the book, we talk a lot about how the pandemic, and we talk a little bit of how they adapted guitar for Chloe and things like that. But one of the things that that Lisa points out, because Lisa's also a paraprofessional, is that the pandemic allowed them to be really creative with her adaptations because they were able to see into the music class. They were able to see what the teacher was doing. They could then adapt for her. She also has some sensory needs, so they could adapt to those sensory needs. And that helped us to think about how one of the outcomes maybe from all of this could be in the name of inclusion is that a lot of parents have been seeing into those classrooms. They've been really mm-hmm. getting a glimpse at what inclusion looks like, what education looks like. And in the section I wrote with Lisa, we really encourage people to think out of the box for things like electives or clubs or some of these things like guitar, music, British history. You know, think about your electives. Think about, you know, what this can look like. And Lisa was saying, you know, now we can glimpse into a classroom for a couple of minutes. We can spend some time at home if you're a parent who's got an idea about how you might adapt some of these things. And maybe it's going to open us up to thinking out of the box because we can, it's a little bit easier for us to sample the courses, you know, at least for those that are still virtual to get a glimpse. Oh, I think we could adapt it this way. And I even thought, because I used to teach high school and I think, my gosh, we used to have to run up and down the hallways, you know, and I can't get to, I'd love for you to try British history, but I can't get to third floor, you know, for us to visit.
Logistically, this isn't going to work.
Yes. I mean, really, when you think about it now, so some of those opportunities might be opening up as we, again, I know we're going to be out of the pandemic soon, but knock on wood, but maybe it's helped us to think more openly about possibilities. And one of the things Lisa says is, just ask, try new things. That's one of the things that we learned. And she said, I was just pleasantly surprised when I said, hey, can we start this thing? And the school's like, okay, let's start it. Yeah. So we wrote about what are some other clubs that we might bring into schools now and in the future when kids really need to make some co-curricular or extracurricular connections. So those are just a few of the things that I think we're really peer heavy and we're just really, I think, I wouldn't say easy to replicate, but could be replicated. And I'm hoping that people are embracing.
And I love like the idea that you keep, you know, coming back to as like, what can we maintain from this? Like, what can we continue on with? And I think some of these ideas do have so much sustainability because at the end of the day, this is sad to say, but logistics rule the world in schools. Like if there's not a staff member, if there's not a class at that period, it's just kind of like period, end of story. But hopefully this will give us more ideas, like you said, about just being creative and like, hey, well, what if we zoomed in or what if we did it differently because we saw that it could work.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% Lean Ground Sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Absolutely. Like, one of my favorite things, well, I shouldn't say, this is not my idea, but my idea is in the book. Let me say, so a lot of folks, and I'm sure you know this too, Sasha, we're doing a lot of virtual calm corners, you know, like they were doing, I don't know, people call them different things, but virtual safe spaces. And so back in our, you know, in the classroom, we would say, do you need to go to take a break? Do you need to go to this calm space? And so a lot, it's not my idea because a lot of people did it, but in the book, in the accommodation section, I write about using virtual calm spaces. And so I made my own, and it's www.virtualcalmcorner.com. And I just made one just so people could see what I'm talking about, but anybody could make a calm space. And what's on that site is, you know, there's visuals, like you can watch Bob Ross paint a picture, you can watch a lava lamp, you know, there's audio tracks, like you can listen to the waves, there's, you know, there's meditations, there's yoga. And so imagine a world where nobody necessarily, unless they, you know, unless movement of certain kind is needed, would necessarily need to leave the classroom to get that sensory break.
Yeah,
you could just put your headphones on. Maybe you go back to, maybe there's a cubby in back, but you can go and just have your getaway. Maybe everybody puts their headphones on and has a getaway for 10 minutes. And so that's the UDL of it all. It's where we've now discovered through this time period that a lot of resources can come to the child individually. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah. So kind of, you know, thinking away from virtual learning as hopefully we are moving more and more into in-person, what advice do you have for teachers as we're in-person, but we have, you know, these kind of intense social distancing guidelines to follow, that how can we still provide opportunities for social interaction and friendships and inclusion when it seems like everyone's telling us we can't do that anywhere?
I know. It is going to be a challenge, and I cannot sit here and pretend that I have all the answers. But one of the things that we did learn is that there, you know, there are lots of ways for kids to connect and socialize that don't require them to be sitting next to each other and engaging in a really humorous three-step handshake brain break, you know. And I'm the queen of those. Believe me, I love that stuff. And I've written a lot about it, so it pains me to say that.
It'll come back.
It'll come back. It will. But for example, you know, I have so many students that I know that are thriving with tools like Flipgrid and Jamboard. And you know these kids too, Sasha, where somebody will say, you know, I'll just give you one example. My friend, who is an adult woman, she's not a student, but she said to me that Facebook changed her life because she no longer had to, if somebody told her a joke, she didn't have to worry about laughing at the right time. If somebody, you know, share something that's really kind of intense, she doesn't have to say, what's the right reaction to that? She can research it. She said, on Facebook, I can take my time. I can see how other people responded to the joke. I can model after that. I can research what's funny about this or what's intense or serious about this. I can craft my response. Nobody's judging me on my affect, my eye contact, and I can be a different kind of friend. Now people know I'm funny. Now people know how warm I am. And that just hit me like a ton of bricks. We talk so much about social media dividing people, but it can actually bring a lot of joy and intimacy to these, to folks who, you know, have been, they've been, you know, in many ways that's been not available to them because of the norms, you know, the typical norms in conversation or social interaction. So I think things like Flipgrid, where students don't have to, they can be funny, they can be themselves, they can, they can show what they know without it having to be a turn-taking moment every time or waiting for that question to come in. They can be use of that app and show what they know. Then they can watch their peers, and they can watch their peers more than once. They can find their favorite teachers. Who teaches the story problem in the best way? Maybe it's not the teacher. Maybe it's this other student, this colleague of mine, or I should say classmate. One of my favorite things to do on Flipgrid has been to do talent shows, classroom-wide talent shows. And so I work with so many students who have special interests. And, you know, we don't have to wait for a moment for you to get to share your love of dump trucks or spider webs or, you know, U.S. presidents. But we can actually, maybe there's a quarterly talent show and anybody that wants to can post, you know, maybe you can play guitar, but maybe you want to talk about spiders and spider webs instead. And that can be honored. And a lot of folks can see that. So I love those potential connections, Jamboard, those kinds of tools where kids, you know, they're sharing content, they're sharing what they remember, and they're getting to post their favorite things. But requirement that there has to be a traditional give and take. And while I think those skills are necessary and there's a space and time for them, I also think that a lot of folks are having their day finally where it's like, wow, I can show what I know without having to, you know, engage in some of these other, you know, remember some of these rules, these social rules. Yeah. So I think those will help us when we come back. And I also think that, you know, that there will be a new focus on things that have only been the lessons always been centered around kids with disabilities. It's like, okay, look, everyone needs social skills, or let's teach everybody how to calm down. It's like, guess what?
We all need that.
And, you know, it's so true. But this is actually right before the pandemic. I was in a third grade and they were doing zones of regulation in third grade.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, it's finally here. Like the UDL of all of this has arrived. And think about that, Sasha. I mean, seating, adapted seating. 20 years ago, if you walked into a classroom and you saw adapted seating, you go, oh, a child with a disability is in this class. Now you walk in and you go, oh, it's just a fourth grade because everyone has that.
That's true.
Or everyone fidgets and it's ubiquitous. So I think that kind of thing is going to be our friend. The fact that everyone's going to want to teach meditation. Everyone's going to want to teach calming down. Everyone's going to want to teach, you know, strategies for connection. And I think you're seeing a lot of traction these days. I don't know if it's because of the pandemic, but you're seeing a lot of traction these days on these ideas that why is it only some kids that have to learn social skills?
Yeah, I know, right?
Why is the burden on some kids? We have to look when really, as you said it, Sasha, everybody needs it. And I think we're going to see more and more of that in our schools.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And to like, you know, to hang on to that and, you know, notice those positive things. Cause I think it's easy for, you know, especially us as adults to be like, it's going to be horrible going back, or it's going to be this, this, and this, but there's going to be some things that'll be beneficial to the whole community, which, you know, we've got to hang on to that.
Well, you know, and can I mention one more thing about that? The other thing that's academic in nature, since we haven't mentioned too much about that, is I just really am excited about, you know, I can remember years ago saying how many students I worked with who loved repetition, who needed repetition. And I would say, you know, sort of as a UDL or a differentiations idea, is I would say, hey, do you think like you could come together as a science group, you know, science team, maybe the two science teachers, special ed teacher, and maybe for the big, you know, seven concepts of the year, could you make like, you know, 3 or 4 minute videos that some students could access for practice? You know, just videos of you talking about those concepts. And they would say, what do you mean? Like me make a video? Like, that's so weird. You know, I mean, I would do it, but some... Or I remember talking to a kindergarten teacher and saying, you know, what if you did some read-alouds to welcome this child into kindergarten or pre-K? He's going to have anxiety. He's going to be worried. He loves seeing, you know, videos on repeat. You could be his favorite star. You could be Blue's best friend. And just people feeling shy and anxious. I think that's also gone. Like, I think that's people true. Are like, put me on TikTok.
You know, yeah,
like,
whatever.
Absolutely. And they've done it. So that's actually one of the ideas in the book. There's a section called Press Record. And I talk about, I made a read aloud video at the beginning of the pandemic for a little kid's book that I did. I talk about a music teacher using a green screen and really being, you know, his sort of very fun self, but doing these songs. And I'm imagining that these kids going on YouTube on the weekends and watching their music teacher and learning those songs from Africa. There's a TikTok. There's a science teacher in the book who's a first year science teacher who made this great biology TikTok video, you know, about cells. And And her students were saying, play it again, play it again. Imagine the benefit of students with disabilities being able to watch their teachers teach this content in a fun and whimsical way as many times as they want. I think that stuff is here to stay.
Yeah. And that's going to be huge. And your point about, you know, I forget what you mentioned about recording and being more comfortable made me think of a story actually recently my cousin told me. She's a preschool teacher and she's like, you know, and she hates being on camera. Obviously now is very used to it. But she was like, if I could, I would say that every year we should have the first week be virtual and then go in person, because this is the first year I had no kids cry in the first day because they all knew her already, right? You know? And she's like, I used to have weeks and weeks where kids would cry every day. And now they were used to her. You know, they had done all the virtual school with her. By the time they showed up, they were already comfortable.
Oh my gosh, that is such a lovely example.
Yeah. So it's cool to think about the potential, like sending home meet the teacher videos and classroom tours and things like that.
And all things that you're mentioning are just right from the playbook of supporting kids on the autism spectrum, right?
Yeah.
I mean, those are things,
oh my gosh.
Right? I mean, I remember writing about that in the first edition of You're Gonna Love This Kid is, you know, make a video tour and thinking, will anybody do this? You know? But now I think schools actually just as a practice, some schools have maps of the school. Some schools do have tours. And those are great. Just they're great universal design supports, not only for comfort, but parents that are making choices about schools. And so you're absolutely right. These are just best practices, but they are so soothing for some of the students that we know.
They are. You know, before I let you go, I want to pick your brain about one more topic that's a little off topic here, because I can't not ask you this. I have like the inclusion expert here. So, you know, I get this question a lot. I actually got a text from a friend yesterday about this, and I had these experiences as a classroom teacher too. What advice do you have for teachers and also for parents who get pushback on, you know, inclusion practices and inclusion opportunities from administrators or from other teachers?
So you mean that the parents and the family wants this child to be included? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, like a teacher. Like, so for example, my friend is in her third career, first year teacher, you know, during a pandemic, hardest year to be a first year teacher. And she texted me and said, you know, the librarian, or I forget, it was the librarian or gym teacher, doesn't want my kids to come. What do I do? And this is what I'm going to tell her. Should I tell her that? And I was like, yes, you should stand up. And she's like, no one, the other teachers didn't ask for it before. So I'm kind of expected to fall in line, but my kids deserve to have library or gym or whatever it was. And I remember as a teacher, especially as a young teacher, having really similar experiences, you know, advocating, hey, I want my fifth graders to go to lunch with the fifth graders, and people being like, no, honey, we don't do that this way. We do it this way. And being like, well, that's not right.
And it's heartbreaking. I mean, if I could say one thing, I do feel like my program prepared me for this, my teacher preparation program, but I don't think many do. And I just think it was just a fluke that it happened to be an aspect of my education. But, you know, that's no one, you know, being a special ed teacher, that, you know, so much of your job will be absorbed by advocacy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is, you know, I write about that a lot, actually, and You're Gonna Love This Kid. There's a whole chapter, you know, on the role of the teacher. And in some ways, it's not fair how much energy has to go into that, but it is a fact of life. And so I have, you know, some big answers to that, and then some smaller answers. And the two big answers are, do never, ever hesitate to lead with research and the law. You know, we have two things at our backs that we didn't have when I started. When I was 22 years old, we didn't have not even a fragment of the research that we have today. And what folks need to know about the research in autism and inclusion is there isn't a single study that suggests that students do better elsewhere. And we have a growing body that suggests that students, including students with the most complex support needs, do better inside inclusive classrooms. So I would say don't hesitate to put the research out there and to have a conversation about, you know, show me the money. I mean, basically, here's what I have on my side and, you know, what's over there. And I wouldn't hesitate for a second to say, we have this language in the law, which, again, 30 years, we're celebrating 30 years of the ADA in 2020, we did. And then we've got nearly 50 years of PL 94-142 that is FAPE, you know, free and appropriate public ed. And we also have these, you know, this law that suggests that when, you know, should say illustrates, outlines that if students' needs can be met inside inclusive classrooms, that's exactly where they need to be. And I feel like sometimes we sort of sidestep around these elements. It's like we have this really powerful law that outlines what are the supports and services exactly, you know, what is the implication, you know, in these situations when somebody says no, and we've got these pillars behind us. So a teacher cannot do that on their own. So this is where you say, you've got to not just share that with whoever you're interacting with, but this should be taken immediately to an administrator because it's not your opinion. You know, when people say, well, she doesn't believe in inclusion, it's like, this isn't Santa Claus. This is not about belief. We have a research body just like we do with literature. And just like an administrator would not allow any fifth grade teacher to get away with doing round robin reading, where just like I grew up with, probably not you, Sasha, when I grew up, everybody read a sentence or paragraph. We went around the room, took forever. That was reading. And no, your administrator wouldn't let you do it. It would not be allowed, not because of their opinion or their belief, but because of the research.
Yeah.
Which again, the belief follows that. But so we have to really take this to our administrators and say, shouldn't be about my belief versus somebody else's belief. This should be about the law and the research versus this situation. So that's the first thing I would say is don't even get into belief systems, you know, at that level, because it should start with research and law. And then my practical pieces that I'll say for the softer approach, when it's just like, oh, I think the person just doesn't know and they're just more extending like questions to me, I have different answers for that. And some of the things that I say are, you know, is collaboration a possibility? I'll never forget approaching my second grade teacher friend. Her name's Erin DiPerna, if she's out there. But approaching Erin and saying, you know, I want to work with you. And we got to the point where she was first reluctant, then interested, then excited, and to the point where we're like to the administrators, can we take a wall down? Can we do this? And we didn't end up doing that, but we did end up co-teaching and collaborating and doing all kinds of interesting things. But is co-teaching available? Is collaboration available? And what I remember when I made a shift in my practice with some of my more reluctant partners, and what I would do is, and this doesn't always work, I get it, but sometimes I would move from saying, hey, can I bring this child in? Or could you have, during morning meeting, could this child have a role? And all of a sudden I said, you know what, I'm going to try something else. And I would say, I'd like to try something. Is that okay? Could I lead the morning meeting? I want to try something. And I never was turned down. I was never turned down. It may be a little flop. And then I could make fun of myself and I wouldn't do it that way again. I think I'd give him his device first or, you know, whatever. Or could we co-teach something? I just wrote this lesson. I've not taught much social studies. Could I try something? So in your collaborations, be bold and be willing to say, if they're going to learn new skills and have new students, could I also learn new skills and have new students? And even if you can't co-teach, collaborate all day, could you try a few things? Again, for those folks that are sort of willing, but unsure, a strategy like that might be helpful as well.
Yes. I love that, like, you know, practical advice of like literally giving phrases of what to say, because sometimes that's what we need. You know, we need the script too.
Absolutely. And just the notion that we are sometimes nervous. There, you know, I never forget the fifth grade teacher that said to me, I was sick all summer. I don't know anything about Down syndrome. And he wanted me to get him a textbook on Down syndrome. Oh. And I was like, no, that's not what you need. I want you to meet this person. And not only did they get along swimmingly, but the teacher, whose name was Gordon, was a very, a very elegant guy. And he wore a shirt and tie to school every day, sometimes a jacket, which is really unusual in fifth grade, right? And it didn't take but 2 weeks for Adam, a student with Down syndrome, to wear a shirt and tie every single day.
Oh, I love
and
that.
When that started happening, you can bet they were thick as thieves. And those, he did not want that textbook anymore. But when he said I was sick all summer and it made me sick to my stomach, I realized, you know, I am sometimes dismissing some of these feelings. And so what am I nervous about? Like, maybe I'm nervous about teaching that math lesson. Let me try to show that I'm willing to learn new things too. Let me try to say what exactly is, let's try some things together if that's possible.
Yeah. And I love your first advice too on, like, you know, leading with the law and with research. That's kind of the advice I always give too. And that I think can hopefully help, you know, I think of a lot of like a younger teacher too, first, second, third year teacher, where you don't want to make waves and you're just going to go with the status quo, but you're like, oh, I know something's not right here, that you know you have what's legally right on your side.
Yeah. And I do, and that's absolutely right, Sasha. And I love that you're saying that. And I think sometimes when we fail to talk about that, it's a misunderstanding that this is about my philosophy versus your philosophy. And mm-hmm. I really want to avoid that, not because an inclusive philosophy is a bad thing. I mean, I certainly have that, but we wouldn't ignore the research in any other area of education. And I gave that literacy example, which many folks do. And so we should not be ignoring it here. One of the things I always say in my workshops is I'll say, raise your hand if you have high expectations for students with disabilities. You know, everybody raises their hand because it would be weird if you didn't. But then I show them all the research on inclusion. And at the end of the exercise, I say, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand again, but what I want you to understand and think about is, if you had your hand up and you truly have high expectations, I want you to pair your high expectations with advocacy for inclusion, because this is what we know is possible. And so if your expectations are high, this is a path, right? And so we want people to understand that it's not just about, I have high expectations and so I'm going to encourage you. It's also, I'm going to advocate what's for the best placement for you, right? And that's maybe a different way to think about it.
Yeah. And you know, I love that you're pointing out that, you know, for some people that might be reluctant, whether it's, you know, other teachers or administrators, it might just be coming from that lack of knowledge. And that's something that we can help with. We're the ones that can help bridge that divide as the teacher.
Absolutely. The other thing I noticed that was really powerful was they don't know what we know. So not mm-hmm. only in terms of how to, you know, what is Down syndrome and I don't need a textbook, but I realized that another colleague of mine who was a middle school teacher, all she could see was the student was not doing what other kids were doing. So after 3 months, she's saying, well, we tried inclusion, but I can see it didn't really work. She's thinking he's going to catch up and do what other kids are doing. And I said, let's look at his IEP. He's blown away every single objective. Last year, he wouldn't come in the room. Last year, he was up every 7 minutes, wandering around in perimeter walking. He does the, she does, all she knows is general, all she sees is what he's doing now and what her other students are doing. She doesn't know where he's come from. She doesn't know this in comparison to what else. She doesn't see the adapted goals in front of her enough. And that was my fault. But I think we also need to be, cheerleader is the wrong word, but we need to help people interpret what they're seeing and to say, this is what he looked like last year. Do you understand what you've been able to do in just a month? Yeah. Do you know that he couldn't do this, this, and this until now? Do you know that he's finally raising his hand? Do you know he's never could read three sentences? And, you know, I learned that the hard way. And so that, I think, is the other element, is when we are collaborating and serving as advocate, to make sure that those around us understand the power of their support and understand what is possible in general ed.
Yeah. And, you know, and people want educators want to rise to high expectations, too. When we're like, look at how much you've done. They're like, well, wait, I could do more. Like, let's keep going.
You are absolutely right about that. That has happened. I mean, I can't think about an instance where that was not the case.
Yeah.
Where you and say, and especially when we say, and I know I didn't do it because I wasn't here. That's you.
Yeah. Yeah. And people, you know, it's the field of education to me is unfortunately kind of a thankless field. Like teachers, paraprofessionals, like they don't get thanked enough. So if you can thank your colleague, like that's huge.
Oh my gosh. And I have to say one more thing about that. It's kind of a funny story. And it also brings us back to the book too. So it's full circle.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
But
full
it's
circle.
So hilarious.
Here.
You're 100%. I'm with you, Sasha, on that. And not only do we not, one of the things, I have a different book on co-teaching, and the last section of the book is celebration. And people skip it. They think it's a silly, funny thing. Oh, she's just trying to kind of encourage us. And I say, no, celebration is actually a tool for growth, because when we stop and celebrate, even for a minute, and say, you know what, Jason actually didn't run out the door today, or I really noticed that he was just gazing at you during that read aloud, and he never does that. It actually helps us notice the little things. And this is so important when we're working with kids, especially those with complex support needs, where they might make progress like in these smaller ways or ways that are hard to observe by one person. So I think celebration and that idea of noticing and calling each other out is really important. And not only will it help folks do more, but it actually helps us all as a team identify what's working. And so the funny story is that this wonderful mom, her name's Robin Weckerly. She's amazing. She's a great writer. I knew her very casually before the book, and now we're kind of, you know, just thick as thieves now. And she wrote this great piece about called Let Them Lead in the book. And it's about parents. And she told me this funny story in the writing of this. And she said that the teacher did something amazing for her son during virtual ed. And the amazing thing was he loves monsters. He makes books about monsters. He writes them. He puts pictures of monsters. It's a little embarrassing for Robin because she said, oh, why couldn't he show off the math he's doing? You know, but and she's like, he picks this, and you know, for no reason that she should feel this way. But one day she walks in the room and he's finally unmuted himself. She can't believe it. He's talking in what she calls kind of the normal, relaxed voice, which he never does when he's talking to a teacher. And she's going, what's happening? And then she looks and he's actually sharing the monster book. That's why he's so excited and relaxed. She's going, her first reaction is, oh Lord, you know, why is he sharing this? But then he's saying more and more. And she goes, oh, the teacher's just going to tell him, put that down, you know? And what happened is class ended, you know, kids hang out after class virtually. And he happened to show her this. And so other kids in the room, and she's going, oh, what's the next page? And Robin's like, oh my gosh, she's really listening to him, you know? So at the end of it, she says, oh, Rex, maybe you would want to add a sentence to some of those pages. I mean, isn't that the smartest teacher who's now going to make this a springboard? She's going to make this fascination into a literacy exercise. So anyway, long story long is Robin says, that teacher will just never know what that meant to us, like that she would take the time, especially during virtual. And I said, oh, yes, that teacher will know because you are going to contact her immediately. But, you know, that's the thing is we don't always do that. We don't have time. We think that, you know, maybe we don't know the person that well. Maybe we don't want to bother that person, you know, whatever. But she did. She did send the book to the teacher and the story. She did let the teacher know. And it's something I've been trying to do a lot this year. Is just contact my kids' teachers. My kids do not have identified needs, but nevertheless, just to say, my gosh, that lesson was amazing. My gosh, my kid is engaged. You wouldn't believe what my child has been talking about at the dinner table. So teachers, let's call each other out, special and general ed, therapists, ELL, OTs, PTs, let's tell each other what's working. And parents, please tell your teachers what's working. And teachers, please tell your families what their support has meant to you. I mean, we really need each other more than ever.
Yeah, we do. Oh, what a perfect note to end on. It's like we planned that.
Yeah, that's right. And you brought it back to the book too. That's great.
Full circle. Well, Paula, thank you so much. Can you share where everyone can go to learn more about you and to find all your books?
Absolutely. So Well, I'm on social media, so you can pretty much find me anywhere on social media. Just my handle is my name, at Paula Kluth. But I have two websites. We're kind of in the midst of merging. So you can find me always at my name, paulakluth.com. And the new project that will be up and running soon, it's up and running now, but it'll be the site will be more populated soon, is called inclusionrules.com, www.inclusionrules.com. So it's kind of a fun new project. And, you know, it's also perfect that we, you know, inclusion does rule. And so that's why I wanted to have a second site of just in the celebration of inclusion. So they can find more about the book on both of those sites. And the book itself, of course, is just on Amazon is the easiest place to find it because it's a self-published work.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Paula, for joining us.
You bet. Thank you for having me again, Sasha. I really, really enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum, everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.